the Science Show on RN, where the election campaigning is reaching its peak. Plenty of bewildering numbers and percentages and lots of disarray. So what is the difference between the main parties on science? We heard from Bill Shorten a couple of weeks ago, and so here is our Federal Minister for Science and Technology, Karen Andrews.
I think that there's a significant difference between what the coalition offers and what a potential Labor government may offer. Clearly, the coalition has been able to demonstrate its commitment to science over a number of years. And I go back to the National Innovation and Science Agenda that was released at the end of 2015, so December 2015. And I'm very confident that that is very good policy. So that was a $1.1 billion announcement, pretty much a 50-50 split between science and innovation. Things such as the commitment to research infrastructure and for there to be a long-term vision for that and for the funding to be locked in for 10 years. So the $1.9 billion that was in last year's budget for research infrastructure, I think that's actually very important. So we've done that with astronomy, we've done that with women in STEM. I'm keen to progress that even further. So if you actually compare what we've done in government to what Labor did when it was last in government, we have invested $1.5 billion more into our science agency. So that includes $97 million more for CSIRO, $53 million more for AIMS, and $126 million more for ANSTO.
AIMS being the Institute of Marine Science.
Yes, and AIMS is doing some absolutely fantastic work in the Great Barrier Reef, and they're looking at a lot of mitigation strategies, which I think are very important for what we're doing. So that's a significant difference. We've also moved to address issues with women in STEM, and of course, as a mechanical engineer myself, that's an issue that I'm particularly passionate about. When I look at the number of people studying STEM, it's clear the evidence is showing that we are not getting the number of students studying maths and science at school that we need to. Those that are studying maths are not all taking the more advanced level. And when we actually look at the jobs of the future, whilst not everyone is going to go on and be scientists, mathematicians, engineers, 75% of those jobs of the future will require skills in STEM. So we've specifically done some things with women in STEM. We have appointed Professor Lisa Harvey-Smith as the first Women in STEM ambassador. We're building on that with more announcements in the most recent budget.
What you have indicated is 3.4 million over 4 years, which is, of course, less than a million a year. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, if you think of how much Michelle Guthrie took out of the ABC when she left as a kind of farewell bundle, she took away more.
Well, the $3.4 million was announced in the budget, but there is actually a $20 million commitment. So there was $13 million Women in STEM as part of NISA. There was an additional $4.5 million that came out in last year's budget. So it's around about $20 million that is our commitment. And I understand, and look, and there's figures that are just tossed around, and I just do want to pick up the figure that Labor and also the Greens have now increased the figure that they're floating around, but they're actually talking about commitments of 3% of GDP.
That's right, by 2030, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's actually an extra $24 billion on top of where we are now. Now, there is no plan from Labor about how they're going to achieve that. So it's all very good for them to come up with a grand figure.
And you called it diabolical in the paper this week, didn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, no scientist would back that sort of a statement, because people with the maths and science backgrounds would ask the first question, yep, fine, show us how are you going to deliver that? And there's nothing.
Well, let me just go to the journal Nature. I don't know whether you saw it, but a couple of weeks ago there was a reaction to the budget, and the headline was Australian Budget Fails to Impress, and then Science Shunned in this year's spending proposal. Let me just take you to the first paragraph. It said, Australians are just weeks away from a national election, and the government's latest budget proposal prioritises tax cuts, roads and small businesses ahead of spending on science. Projects in nuclear medicine, environmental protection and gender equality in science received modest investments, but there was no new money for research grants, and universities would be worse off under the proposal. What do you say to that?
Well, where I started in this interview, where we developed the National Innovation and Science Agenda, that was the $1.1 billion that went into that. There's been additional funding that's gone in for research infrastructure. So there's actually been, for over the last few years, a significant amount of money going into science and to research. Now, I think that the bit that's missing is the business investment in research and development. Now, that has been going down. And the questions that must be asked are what can be done to encourage businesses to work with our research organisations and our universities to make sure that they are reaping the benefits of significant researchers that we've got at universities, but also the expertise more broadly that sit in research organisations that are very keen to get out there and work with industry. And it's not just necessarily the commercialisation of ideas, that's a key part of it. But for some time, industry has been trailing. So it's all well and good to say, yes, government needs to be committing to science. But the next part of this equation is to make sure that we are getting businesses, industry to understand that they need to step up their commitment to research and development as well.
Yes, there's lots of discussion about whether, you know, you should give block money for enterprises rather than targeted for particular projects. But that's in some ways a technical thing that many of the public don't necessarily understand. And some journalists, like the one you're talking to at the moment, finds slightly confusing. But let me ask you a question about what you said in an interview we broadcast earlier this year. And that is very interesting thing about how we should be led by the evidence when it comes to policy and things like climate rather than ideology.
Yeah.
Do you find it a bit of a struggle to get many of your colleagues to listen to that point?
Look, I'm normally pretty good at getting my colleagues' attention when I need to. But look, it's not just an issue with my colleagues. It's how do we actually get the message about science out to the general population and get them to understand that it's a key part of what they have done in the past, what they do now, and what they will do into the future. Once we do that, we can then take it to the next step and say, well, this is how we actually need to build our decision-making on the science and then on the evidence. Look, when I speak to my colleagues, I like to think I've got a very methodical and rational way of speaking to them. And I actually set out the process, I set out the evidence, and I say, this is why I think we need to take some particular action.
Between you and me, however, is it sometimes a bit of a struggle in the cabinet room to get science and technology the attention it deserves?
Now, Robin, it's clearly not just between you and I because you've asked me that question.
I know.
But I will actually clearly answer that. Look, there are a lot of conflicting priorities. So no matter who sits around the table, you've actually got to put your arguments together. And I believe in a rational and methodical way. My colleagues actually do listen. I do talk to them about environmental science. I do talk to them about energy science. I do talk to them about nuclear medicine science. And they do listen. Do I win every funding argument? No, but science is not just about funding either. Science is about enlightening people, getting them to understand that there is a basis of fact behind what we have done in the past and what we need to do in the future.
One question which is not directly to do with the election, but prompted by a leading person in science in Australia who asks about, in fact, the Bureau of Meteorology and how there have been attacks on them from certain quarters about so-called falsifying or fiddling with the figures to make it suggest that climate is more of a problem than it should be. Do you think to some extent you ought to protect the Bureau of Meteorology and its scientists from that kind of rather loose accusation?
Well, what I say to people is, when you give me the answer, I want it to be based on scientific evidence because I want to be able to be in a position to defend what you're telling me. And I feel very strongly about that. So when I ask people to give me some information, I expect it to have the proper scientific rigour attached to it because I want to be able to defend that work. I want to be able to stand up there for all of our scientists. I want to be able to say, this is how that recommendation has been derived. And of course, I don't have direct responsibility for scientists in the Department of the Environment or Bureau of Meteorology as well. But yes, I certainly want to be in a position where I can defend Australian scientists.
One of the crucial things about the long-term nature of where we are in the Pacific near to Asia is that we have some of the biggest players in science and technology in the world growing next to us. In other words, we simply have to keep up. Otherwise, this country will languish, will it not?
Look, certainly we do need to keep up. But what is important is that we don't try and be all things to all people. So you talk about our Asian neighbours and the Pacific regions. So some of the things that we're actually world leading in that are very important are things like the blue economy, tropical medicines. It's really important that we do that. Now, we, I believe, are global leaders. That's where we need to make sure that we keep that advantage, work with our neighbours in the Pacific and in Asia. Space is also another area that we have some unique opportunities. I mean, we have a unique location in the southern hemisphere, and that's why the coalition has actually invested about $335 million in funding into space, and that's very important to Australia and to the rest of the world.
Karen Andrews is the Federal Minister for Industry, Science and Technology and is an engineer, a proud one. The Science Show on RN.